Here is a little soundbite from tonight's first interview.
On shore the next morning, Rongo Whakaata watched as Tupaia and the kidnapped boys approached. This time, the Brits stood way back. Iwi records tell us that the two older boys were brothers. The youngest was their cousin, and Te Rākau was uncle to all three. One of the uncles of the boys, possibly a father, yelled out to the eldest boy, "Could you put that red coat over Te Rākau as a sign of passing, as a sign of respect,
lifting the tapu?"
Just a show of aroha too.
That's a bit of the film Tupaia's Endeavour, the story of the Tahitian high priest and navigator who accompanied Captain James Cook during his expedition to Aotearoa in 1769. Lala Rolls is the film's director, producer and editor. She's with me now. Kia ora, Lala.
Kia ora.
This is the first film about Tupaia, I'm guessing?
Actually, yeah, I think it is. Funnily enough, we've made different versions of this film. So we did a Māori TV miniseries a while ago, and part of our way to get to this feature film, which was always our aim, was to fundraise and make little products along the way, and which has been torturous process, but also wonderful, because what it's meant is that each time we've shared the film, more information has come our way, which has sort of finally culminated in this feature film, which is just beautiful on the big screen with the beautiful sound you heard there. That was a mōtiatia that Wayne Nata wrote for us, specially for the film.
So the chant that we just heard there.
And that was one of our things. We tell the story in so many layers that one of the layers is music. So we're always embedding music to storytell in a really traditional, in a very deeply Polynesian and sort of spiritual way, actually.
I'm guessing that that scene that we heard there was after the violent encounter that happened between Cook and the Endeavour crew in Māori around Te Rāwhiti,
Yeah. Yeah, Turanganui Akiwa on the shores there. So, yeah.
To some extent, it's surprising that it's taken so long for Tupaia to get this recognition, because his role and just his situation, being this Polynesian who is helping a bunch of Europeans discover a country which is also part of Polynesia, is a fascinating situation to be in, isn't it? It's got all sorts of... Well, I mean, if you wanted to make a bit of fiction, this would be a classic story, wouldn't it? But it's true.
Yeah, and torturously true, because it's so complex. Like, in a way, if it was fiction, it would be easier, you know, because there's so many strands going on in the story. Tupaia himself, one of the guys in the film, a lovely Tahitian carver, says Tupaia, he had so many hats on his head, and he did. He had a lot of hats on his head, you know, he played a lot of roles. And all the encounters were so complex. It was really hard to thread that together in a film, because it's not just a simple thing of then someone shot a gun and someone died. It's someone shot a gun, someone said something, then Tupaia tried to do something, and then someone else, you know, just really complex. And that's the thing, it's not black and white. History's not black and white, and I think that is part of what we sort of tried to address in the film.
How did Tupaia meet Cook?
Ooh, well, we in our research and reading Dayman Salmon's book, Trial of the Cannibal Dog, and also Joan Druitt wrote a book about Tupaia, a biography of Tupaia that came out just the year we were starting to shoot. So between those books and the Cook's journals and everything, we've pieced together that basically Tupaia had already met Pākehā when Captain Wallace arrived. So 2 years before Cook, Captain Wallace arrived from Britain, first European to arrive in Tahiti. And Tupaia was a really genius linguist, and he was working with a high priest called Purea at the time. And he basically started, he picked up language really fast, and he started managing the relations and sort of trying to contain the actions of the British and keep the power plays going okay, so that everyone would we filmmakers feel that it's more like he was just trying to contain the situation, but also maybe play a bit of power play as well. Who knows? Anyway, Wallace left. Tupai went down another side of the island. Bougainville arrived and left. Tupai wasn't even around. But then Cook came, and there was an early misunderstanding where a whole lot of Tahitians were shot over a stupid small incident. Terrible incident.
This was for the Endeavour?
Yeah, Endeavour.
So there had been already a history of violence with the Endeavour and Polynesians before they got to Aotearoa.
Yeah, well, poor old Cookie, you know, he had a ship full of trigger-happy young sailors, and they're on the shores of Tahiti, and they're exchanging nails for sex, and they're enthralled by the beauty of the place and the people and the generosity of the people, actually. And I think they leaned really heavily on the generosity of the people. And they were building Fort Venus, and they'd been exchanging just like a nail for a tree and a nail for a woman and whatever. And finally, a Tahitian reached for a gun. He was like, okay, enough of these small exchanges. Give us something of significance. And he stole a gun. And the Brits... the midshipman yelled an order, and the Brits just open fired. So Sidney Parkinson was horrified. He actually, you know, in the journal, Sidney Parkinson's like, he said something like they were shooting at them as if they were wild ducks.
How many died?
I'm not sure. A lot. Some. My history's a bit
so
loose.
After this horrific event,
yeah, so
from
Tupai,
a Tahitian point of view, an absolute disaster, Tupai accompanies...
Yeah, no, so what happened was, so Tupai wasn't even there. He was down the other side of the island doing some really important business with Perea, who was this high priestess, high chief, high Ariki. And this is the thing that we really like about our film, is that we're constantly reminding people that business as usual was occurring in the islands. Just because the Brits arrived didn't mean everything stopped. They had complex, interesting lives already going on. So he was busy. But after that happened, he was about 2 days sail away. And 2 days later, Tupai turned up. And the Tahitians had shut down communications. And then suddenly they opened them up again by arriving at Cook's Waka, Cook's Endeavour on a Waka, with Tupai. And introduced him, and Cook said, you know, he is one of the most shrewd, ingenious men, and he knows more about the religion and culture of these islands than any we have met. I don't think he did. I think he was really good at language, so Cook could understand he knew so much.
Yes.
But he did also know a lot. He was smart.
But why did he go with... I mean, he could have. This is almost like these men they could have been seen as murderers. I mean, probably were seen as murderers.
Yeah.
Why did he go with them?
I love you, Brian. But why?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I don't know why. I didn't know this story, Lala. And this is sort of throwing a bit of a spanner in the works of my question line. Now it seems
hilarious.
Even more remarkable that he chose to say
it. Totally remarkable. You really should see the film. It's just because our film is lovely, but the story itself is remarkable. So many stories. Be careful when you ask me questions, because I don't stop easily.
That's all right.
But what happened was Banks invited. They realised Tupai was amazing. Like he managed the Brits' stay. He just kind of kept containing them and managing them, and you know, telling Banks that if this is a gift of tarpa cloth, not of a naked girl, when a girl came up and presented tarpa cloth by letting it drop from her body, you know, and all the way guiding them culturally. He was with them when they measured the transit of Venus. He took them around the country and managed arrivals at different marae with different iwi, or I don't know what Tahitians, my friend Enamanui River could tell me, but I don't know what Tahitians call iwi. Anyway, different iwi. So he was incredibly useful. He also guided them as they went around Tahiti, made sure they didn't land on coral reefs, and, you know, he knew the waters back the front. He knew how to read the sea and the sky and the currents. So he was just amazing. And so Banks said to Cookie, Michael Tuffery calls Captain Cook, you know, Banks says to Cookie, we should take this guy, you know, with us because he's really smart. We should invite him to come. And Cookie says, oh, we can't really afford it. And Banks is like, well, I'm really a rich young gentleman and I can do what I want, so I will look after his expenses if you say yes. So Cook said yes. Banks invited Tupaia, and Tupaia took 2 days to think about it. So he basically got an invite and had to think about it. And his descendant on Raiatea Taputapuatea, which is where Tupaia came from in Tahiti, which also happens to be the place, many of the Maori waka that came here, the original waka, came from Raiatea Taputapuatea in Tahiti. So it was a central leaving place for our people here from Tahiti. Mm. So huge ancestral connection. Anyway. So Toops, as we call him, Tupaia says, let me think about it. But he knew because there had been return voyaging of Aotearoa, and he had relatives that had gone there, and he wanted to know about them according to his descendant. That was one reason. Others have posited that he wanted to just go and find out where these white people came from, what their technology was, how could that technology be used for Tahitians, you know, knowledge gathering for his people to keep his people safe. I'm talking too much in a way. You kind of have to see the film because it's so complex. There were prophecies that had come before. He knew they were going to come and they were going to take things and destroy land. And so maybe part of him was trying to safeguard. And yet other people have said that he wanted to go and get guns to shoot some fellas in Bora Bora who had desecrated his marae in Taputapuatea. I actually personally don't think that's true, because that's what Pākehā historians have said. But his descendant told us that, in fact, the war with Bora Bora was a whole different story. That he was actually related to the people on Bora Bora and could have been a high chief there if he had wanted to. So it's not quite what the history has said, according to his descendant. The whole point of the film is we tell it all as much as possible from the voices of the people who are the descendants of the people who were on the shores when Cook arrived.
Which brings me to this part of the interview, which is, well, how do you go about telling Tupaia's story? There are two people in particular that helped you out in the film. There's the artist Michael Tuffery and the actor Kirk Torrance. Yeah. What are their roles and why did you choose them?
Please, Brian, just stop me if I'm talking too much, all right?
I will. I'll say we're out of time. It's time for At the Movies.
Do that. All right. Well, it's time for At the Movies with Simon Morris. So Kirk Torrance is a good buddy of mine and is a great swimmer. Used to be an Olympic, a Commonwealth swimmer. And I always had a vision that, you know, how can we tell a story of a man who's from a long time ago? There's no other footage. And I want to have these sort of symbolic representations of his moments of freedom when he feels free. And I wanted them to be in the sea, in the water, swimming free, because that speaks of understanding currents and water and being at one with the sea. So Kirk. Also, Kirk's the same age Tupaia was.
How old was Tupaia when he got on the Endeavour?
So Kirk, I'm spilling your age here, brother. about 40, in his sort of mid to late 40s, about the same age as Cook. So older man, you know, like older and wiser. And maybe that's the other thing, knew he didn't have much longer left. So if anyone was going to go, it may as well be him sort of thing. Who knows? So Kirky for that reason, and also Ngāti Kahanunu, who have a strong relationship to Tahiti and to Tupaia himself.
Yeah.
And Michael Tuffery chose him because basically Tufts and I bumped into each other. We'd both read the Anne Salmon book. We'd always talked about doing a film where we did something more with Tuffery's art anyway. And I said, have you heard of Tupaia? And he said, oh, my God, I just read this book. And I was like, oh, my God, I just read this book. And we said, that's it. That's the film. So, yeah.
Did Tupaia keep a journal himself, given he was a brilliant linguist?
Yeah.
Did he write?
You got to see our film.
Okay.
So annoying. Yeah. okay, so
a yes or no will do on that
one. Okay, I say yes. Other people aren't sure. There was no journal. And Sam and last night, we had a beautiful screening in Auckland. Amazing screening in which four young men, if they're listening to, I don't think they listen to RNZ, four rangatahi Māori were in the audience, and at the end of the screening, they got up and asked if it would be okay if they gave us a haka to thank us.
Ooh,
and it was the
that's an
most
honor.
moving moment, and we were so honoured. So you four rangatahi, two of them did the haka, but there were four all together sitting there. Please thank, you know that we loved it and we thank you for that. Feels like it sealed the deal. We can let Te Pae go into the world now. I didn't answer your question.
No, you didn't, apart from saying yes, and that's fine.
I don't want you to spoil the whole thing. Didn't write a journal, and Anne Salmon last night was at the screening, and she was asked what is her biggest, what would she want if she could go back in time or see Te Pae, and she said she wished he could have written a journal. She wished that when she was going through all her research and she had all the British journals, that she had a Te Pae journal.
What did Cook, and maybe more importantly Banks, write about when they wrote of Te Pae? What are their memories, written memories of him?
Interesting. Partially great admiration, then sometimes a little bit sort of piffy, trying not to swear, a little bit sort of irritated with his because the thing is, he never bowed to play obedient native, because he wasn't colonized. His mind was so uncolonized, he continued to behave as a high priest arioi. I think Anne Salmon calls it a bit whakahihi, a bit quite full of himself, because he was a man of stature. So it kind of annoyed them sometimes, you know. He didn't sort of scurry around helpfully. He was like, yep, this is what I think. What do you think? You know, he was an equal. He acted as an equal. But they also admired him enormously, so yeah.
For him, however, this voyage to Aotearoa and its first contact, which is to some extent, now that you told me of what happened in Tahiti, a bit of a repeat of the disaster there. How do you feel at this point?
Yeah.
For him itself, I'm actually thinking of the point of view of his family, his whānau back in Tahiti, thinking he's just gone off with this bunch.
Yeah.
That's a pretty dangerous thing to do. Is he ever going to come back?
Yeah, I think they did wonder if he'd come back. I think a really lovely thing that Anne said in the film is that things were really different back then, and we have to pull on every sort of thing we can pull on to try and understand what things were like. But the whole spiritual life was different too, and I think death wasn't so seen as a different place in a way, maybe. I don't know. I just feel like I think for Te Pae, death was inevitable, and he was the one who could go on this journey. He was the one who could talk to them, and he had with him Taiato, who was his acolyte, and I think that he always imagined that Taiato would come back and bring back. So whatever they did, the whole way he was feeding knowledge to Taiato, and Taiato would bring back the ideas, even if Te Pae didn't.
So there were two Tahitians on the
Indian. Yeah, 12-ish-year-old Taiato and Te Pae.
But as that voyage around Aotearoa progressed, and we start off with
disaster.
And at this point, do we know how he felt about what Cook and his men were doing?
So the first day when Cook came ashore, he left Te Pae on the boat, which was really stupid. Again, a misunderstanding happened. There were lots of sort of young boys on the boat who were the ship's boys and, you know, helpers and working their way up through the Navy. God, Anne Salmon would know much better, and actually Joan Druid as well, about the naval stuff. But anyway, these young boys were there. Young boys were guarding the yawls. Cook and them were up the river, and Māori came out, four of them, Te Maro, who was a beautiful, intelligent, gentle leader, an ariki for Ngāti Oneone. He was a gardener, and he was really famous for feeding his people, like famous for being a great gardener. So this is the kind of chief he was. He approached Te Lea Wero of some sort to find out who these people were and what they were. But they were walking towards these little boys who freaked out and shouted out, and the coxswain fired warning shots. And, of course, Māori had never heard guns before, so they kept walking, warning shot, kept walking. Coxswain freaks out, like, you know, they're still coming and I'm firing a gun. So he I shouldn't tell you. You have to watch the film. No.
That's enough. That's enough.
But anyway, Tupai wasn't there. So the next day, Tupai came ashore and tried to fix it all. And really, to some large extent, did fix it all. But then Cook did some more panicky, stupid things. And then the next day, Tupai really got to fix it all. And then from then on, Maori went ahead of the endeavour and told people that Tupai was coming. It was all about Tupai coming with these weirdos. But Tupai was at the front.
I'll ask you one more question, which you may not be able to answer completely because that might be giving away too much. But we've always, growing up at school, Endeavour was Cook's thing. And I'm wondering now how much Tupai shaped that expedition, how much he influenced it and made it what it was.
Hugely. You should talk to Anne Salmon. She could really talk about this. Huge. He, without Tupai, the Endeavour may not have survived that first the second day. They wouldn't have survived the second day because the mistakes on the first day meant that a whole lot of warriors had amassed and were ready to really attack. And even if the Brits had guns, Māori would have outnumbered them and they would have been either severely damaged or not made it. And what, even more than that, even more than that, nothing. That's it.
And finally, how can people see it? Because you've been raving about it.
You've got to see it.
Talking about people really enjoying it.
Yeah.
I want to watch it how? Online or at the theatre?
So I really wish you could all see it at the theatre, my peoples, because at the theatre, the amazing soundtrack by Melanie Graham, sound designer, and Stephen Galligan, Ricky Gooch, beautiful music. Just, it lifts the whole film a whole nother 1,000%. But the film is beautiful and you can watch it online. So if you watch it online, you have to promise to watch it on the best screen in the house with some friends and with the best speakers in the house. And make, you know, let it wash over you. Sit there and let it be an experience as if you were in the movies. Because, you know, tautoko to in, you know, the New Zealand International Film Festival for daring to do this hybrid festival. And let's support them.
Lala, thank you so much for joining us. Hope it goes well.
Cool. Thanks a lot.
Thank
it was
you,
lovely to talk.
Lovely to have you in here. Lala Rolls, she's the director, producer and editor of Tupai's Endeavour, a documentary about the Tahitian priest and navigator who accompanied Cook when he came from Tahiti down to Aotearoa back in 1769.